It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running somewhat miraculously on this third day of April, 2024. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. And where if you pop into the aforementioned merry, wacky, zany, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, Irish Dave and Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo, and you only just a moment ago would have missed Max, chiming in from Deutschland. Sorry you couldn't stick around, Max. Nice to see you there in the room. But everyone is capably moderated, of course, by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Zimmergist extraordinaire, Roger in Oregon. Roger, I trust your appointment went well. At least I certainly hope it did. I'm sorry I wasn't there to follow up yesterday, but, well, we're going to get to that right now. Oh, by the way, hi. I'm Robin, sometimes also frequently known as Roxanne. And yesterday was a day. But if you'd please be so kind, like each podcast episode or publication or however it is we're referring to it these days, and make sure you're subscribed on a couple of platforms. That way we know for a fact that, you know, if one platform misses the upload, another one will likely pick it up. And, you know, leave a remark here and there. They're awfully helpful. And, golly, in a couple of months, we're going to pass 750,000 downloads on Podbean alone, which we haven't been on for certainly not even half of the history of this program, I don't think. So that's impressive. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. The packets are passing. The streams are screaming. Obviously, I was not here yesterday. Annette and I spent most of yesterday wondering if there was going to be a today for us. I don't quite know how to really describe it, but suffice to say that I've grown up with tornadoes all my life. And as a friend of mine, Miss Terry, said, you know, I think I'd rather ride out a hurricane than a tornado. You can at least try to outrun a hurricane. No outrunning a tornado. So the thunderstorms came in late on Monday evening. By the way, the meeting went great. It was nice to be able to talk to people about what I hope for in terms of my candidacy for House of Delegates. By the way, off the top, thanks to everybody who wrote to make sure that Annette and I were okay. Thanks for all your kind wishes. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Todd. One and all, thank you, Theo. So many people to thank, reaching out across various platforms of social media. I joke from time to time about the rickety, coal-fried, antiquated, held together with spit toilet paper and baling wire Appalachian power electricity grid, and those are really quite true. But I want to take a moment and express my gratitude to the folks who maintain that aforementioned spit toilet paper and baling wire rickety, antiquated, coal-fried power grid there at Appalachian Power, the men, the women, almost entirely certain non-binary people who go out and deal with these disasters as they happen. Because they did what can only be described as yeoman work yesterday. We were cruising through the morning. It was thundering and raining and carrying on. Been known to do that in early April around here. But then, usually when the aforementioned antiquated power grid goes down, you get the one blink and back, second blink and back, third blink and gone. No. We got one blink, it came back, and then it was gone. And then the shit hit the fan. It wasn't long before notifications came across our phones saying, get somewhere safe. This is a tornado warning. This is not a watch. This is not a drill. A tornado has been spotted in your area. And so Annette and I ran out the studio door in the yard with rain just dry. You're wondering why we went outside. Well, that's because this house has a basement, but the only access to said basement is from outside. Makes me really think about whether or not there might be a real percentage in trying to make a trap door, but just to go down into the basement from within the house, but have you ever tried to get a golden retriever through a trap door? No? No, I haven't either. I don't think it would be successful. Because we were standing there in the driving rain, and Shadow was on his leash, and Shadow did not want to go down those stairs. So Annette was pulling on the front end, and I was pushing on the back, and we finally got him down there. And then we got a couple of folding chairs down there, and we just sat there huddling and wondering if this is how 30 years come to an end. I mean, it wasn't like that, but those are the thoughts that were passing. It wasn't like, I mean, it's not like she was floating on a wooden door in the North Atlantic and shoving me off into the icy darkness, okay? But it's an unnerving thing. And we sat there watching our phones and counting the minutes and listening to the madness and the chaos outside and waiting until noon, one, for the all clear. And then, and in the meantime, she had fallen as we went around the back of the house. And she's right stoved up today. And of course, we were both just absolutely fried on adrenaline. And everything went down. It'll tell you who when you look on your cell phone and it says who your carrier is. Well, mine stopped saying that and started saying it was U.S. Cellular. Because apparently the carriers were handing off amongst the antennae around here. Bill Gates, 5G! No, quit it. Internet was... I mean, I couldn't open an app. It was a miracle just to get enough wireless internet to be able to even look at the weather app and see where things stood and get a look at what was coming. So the power was out, and we were doing what you do when the power's out, you know, read something or watch something. That she was watching movies that she'd saved, and I decided to pick up my hard copy of All the King's Men and read on that for a spell. And I got the message out saying probably no program yesterday, because yeah, I know what it's like when things go south like this. And eventually I drove down into the little town nearby where they at least had meaningful bars, and was able to communicate with my family and tell them that we were okay and get that aforementioned post out saying no show. And I saw where there had been a considerable amount of damage. And then came back home. And this is where it gets bizarre, because I've sat through several long nights of tornado watches. Down where I grew up, there's a siren. We don't have a siren. This is West Virginia. We can't afford those. Maybe if I get to the legislature, we can have a little chat about that. Because now that climate change is real, it looks like we're going to be needing them. Because those things really don't come here that often. But they came with a vengeance yesterday. And then the one that came yesterday afternoon, around about 5 o'clock. Thank you, Devin. I saw your message. Earlier today, I couldn't see it yesterday. Lo and behold, about 5 o'clock, another message came through. Tornado warning. Tornado spotted in your area. Get your ass back to the basement. And so we did. This time, Shadow was a little bit, well, he understood the process a little bit better. So we had a light and a couple of bottles of water, and we'd made preservations, as the saying goes, for the kitty cats upstairs, and they were safe. And that one was a lot different. That one came with hail that ran somewhere between golf ball and baseball. And thunder, and the sky turned like the color of a bruise. And yes, it sounds like a freight train. And in the aftermath of that, we began. We were so in the dark, we literally too. But we couldn't even tell what was going on in our immediate vicinity because, you know, like the warning, the tornado warning said, check in, tune into local media. It's like, what local media? And not to editorialize too much, but that shit went away with the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Everything's running on computers. And no. So primarily my daughter out in New Mexico was providing me with information back here because she was watching it from out there and just worried sick. And I told her we were okay, but it was terrifying. And we've spent pretty much all day just trying to reset, if that makes any sense. It's just so weird to sit there and know that this may be how it ends and you don't have a damn thing to say about it. You can't fight back. You can't do any more than what you've already done. Traumatic. And so the weather stayed bad all day long. Quite often after a tornado, when all that shit blows through, the next thing you see are blue skies. After the first tornado went through, we heard the birds come back. That's always a sign. When it's about to get bad, the birds quit. And everything goes silent, and the birds will go to ground. Well, shortly after the first one, they were back up in the trees and tweeting merrily. And then when we went back out the second time, no tweeting birds. And by that time, evening was coming on, but they still didn't come back. It got a little lighter, but no. And so we watched as best we could the weather reports, and it was like, well, this is going to be a long one, because there were expectations that there might be one coming in the 10 o'clock hour. And there was, just not for us this time. It carved a swath of destruction and devastation straight up the Taze River Valley, the valley of the old Taze River, back from the days of Pangaea, came roaring up the Kanawha Valley, tore hell out of places like Dunbar and St. Albans, raised hell in Charleston, came on up the valley, and usually they stop here because they can't penetrate the mountains. But, well, one of the nature of climate change is such that storms will get worse, and storms will get more severe, and storms will get more fierce, and that means they will reach places like this that have been heretofore safe. That's life on a warming world, a heating world. We're okay. I went out this morning, and when the first one hit, it was probably 75 degrees. And by the time the second one hit, things had diminished considerably. We're expecting an overnight low in the low 30s. High tomorrow of, I think, 45. And snow, y'all, snow. Not nothing to speak of, but still, snow. No, the car did not get done in. The windshield is okay. No garage here. We've got some damage. Mainly to the roof over the studio. I had done some work on that a couple of years ago. Looks like it's time to redo that. About 4:30, half hour before airtime, I heard a big thunderous rumble and went back in the mansion and looked at Annette and said, "Not again." She said, "No, no, look, it's blue skies." So that was just the usual end of shift, devastating explosion on some mountaintop removal site nearby. So that's all that was. That was just West Virginians being poisoned for the profits of the coal companies. Crews were out. I've heard reports that a couple of trailer courts were, trailer parks were erased from planet Earth. That the emergency crews were out digging through the rubble for survivors. This morning, as far as I can tell, to the best of my knowledge, there were no fatalities, which, given the circumstances, is absolutely stunning. Stephen New York wrote earlier and said, and since I, we don't have to worry about things like blasphemy here or anything. But Steve said, "It occurred to me that this proves that God loves the transes. Either that or you just use your SLTW powers to move the tornadoes. I would never do that because that means that I would be moving them from me onto somebody else. I take the preachings of the American prophet and saint Samuel Clemens, seriously, peace be upon him, praying for rain on your crops is praying for a drought on another's. But it missed us. And hey, I didn't even have to put any lamb's blood on the post and lintels of the door or nothing. It's kind of nice. All it took was one little trans flag. That table is, in fact, solid wood. It is not veneer. We keep it there for a reason. But there's going to be a lot of work to be done, and make West Virginia great big old Governor Jumbo Justice has declared this a disaster area, as well as several other counties in West Virginia. I hope things just stay settled down for a little bit. Sure would be nice. Micah says, somehow I'm not relieved. For good reason. But I just wanted to let you know. And then it was fairly miraculous. Annette and I decided that we would sleep in shifts. No, I don't mean like nightgown shifts. Damn it. But I was just laying there lighting candles and cursing the darkness. And she was there with the golden one. And I was just sitting there reading along through all the King's Men. It is a book of its time, and it has problematic language in it. And by that, you know what I mean. But it's a hell of a book. And so I was just plowing on through it. And then lo and behold, a little after 1 a.m., everything blinked back on. And I was like, well, bless you AEP guys. Hope they were getting triple time for it. I think they're union guys, which would be great. IBEW men and women and nibblings. And, of course, after something like that, once the lights go on, you wait for the lights to go back off. So I am not, to be quite candid, I am not at my entirely most perky. I'm trying to catch up with a little bit of missed sleep over the course of the day. But, of course, there was also work to do because I knew that I'd be on air this evening. At least I hoped I would be. And so I tried to catch up some on what I missed yesterday. One of the things I did do was reach out to our dear friend Horst in Taiwan to make sure he and his were okay. And he wrote back to say that, yes, in fact, they were. He said that it was a nasty one, 7.2 on the Richter scale. But that the part of town they're in isn't as prone to being wrecked as the part that, well, was. So I'm glad and gratified to know that. Of course, that earthquake makes me think that, well, along the Ring of Fire, the Pacific Rim, something else is probably going to start shaking soon enough. And that's pretty much it, you know, and it's not nearly as dramatic in the telling as it was in the living, but frankly, I don't want it to be as dramatic in the telling as it was in the living, because sitting there and potentially waiting to die, or arguably worse, be maimed, isn't pleasant. Oh my goodness, Nidia, I just got a message from Nidia. Tornado fun at Shea Nidia. That's going to be fun to get out of the way. Big old pine trees down. A neighbor near me up on a hilltop, less than a mile away, lost their roof. Nydia, I'm so glad that it missed your house. Everybody in this area has been through some things. So that's the story from Mount Colby gone. And there's so much to talk about this evening. Charlie wrote and said, I'm sorry about what's happening in West Virginia. I hope you're all right. Love, Charlie. Thank you, Charlie. We're okay. Skeert. And hoping we don't get another one of those. But okay. Nydia says the power line down with the tree in her yard. It's a mess all over Charleston. I can imagine it is. It's a mess all over here. On up the road, little area past Heiko called Lookout got scrubbed. Oak Hill, Fayetteville got damage. Out in an area called the Babcock, that took a hammering. And the thing is, up until, you know, this era, this was one of those places where you could feel, and there's a lot of people who live in single wides, double wides, and this is one of the places in the country where it's like you can feel good about that. I'm not talking about from a status or anything. No, I'm talking about the fact that, you know, it's not going to get blown, you know, your house isn't going to get blown away in a high wind. This feels like it was the equal to, Nydia, tell me if you think differently. This was the equal to or worse than the derecho of 2012. Maybe not quite, but God, in the derecho of 2012, we were without power for 2 weeks or more. So maybe it wasn't as bad in that regard, but the damage is significant. Nydia said, still got my solar panels, though. Yeah, I saw those in the background. I am so glad you do, Nydia. Yeah, Micah, this program is live. It absolutely is. And we'll get into some more current stuff fairly quickly. I broke a little rule here because every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. But I did want to get all that out there because I know people have been worried, and I appreciate your concern. It means so much to me. Thank you to Ann across the pond. I hope you're feeling better, Ann. And thanks as well to... good news. Thank you to a kind anonymous friend, our kind anonymous internet friend, who actually provided a Have a Show on Me for yesterday, which, by the way, also finished off Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge from Monday. And thereby qualifying for the $300 doubling. So we are down to basically $300 to go to keep up with this evening. And it's going to, and hopefully we can knock that down. The PayPal button is at headon.live. If you want to use the U.S. Postal Service, the mailing address, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801, is there for your convenience. Checks and money orders should be made payable to Robin Kincaid because we've got a new system in place with the passing of Boss Man Wayne. So that. Let's see. Emilio says, I'm glad you're okay. Hope you feel better soon. But, yeah, why did you summon the tornado towards your area instead of sending it to Steve Bannon? It makes no sense. Oh, yeah, the Chewbacca defense again, Emilio. Really? Don't make no sense. I didn't summon it toward me. I was trying to get it up and overhead and get it on out. Yeah. But I get your point, Emilio. By the way, just to keep the Keebler elves happy, obligatory Star Trek reference, courtesy of Lee, a tornado is bad, an ion storm may be worse. Episode Mirror, Mirror. You could have ended in a ended in a barbarian universe. That's true. And, you know, Ninja Sulu and Throat Slit and Spock and that beard. Yeah. Yeah, we're just going to have a little rain here and there now, and that's not nearly as terrifying. A little bit of breaking news just before airtime via Reuters. Judge Juan Marchand denied Nitwit Nero's motion to delay his April 15th trial on, you know, about the election interference, i.e. the hush money that he paid to Stormy Daniels to keep her from going public with the story of back when they made Ficky Fick, you know, because he cheated on his first wife with his second wife, he cheated on his second wife with his third wife, and while she was pregnant with their kid, the fifth of his by three baby mamas, he cheated on her with a porn star. And so Judge Marchand said, no, sorry, ain't going to happen. And the basis for the claim was that,
look, you need to wait until my immunity claim is ruled on.
No, dumbass, no, Judge Marchand doesn't. Because this is all shit you did before you, arguably, became president. You were just a citizen then, but you're too goddamn dumb to realize it. Oh, well. But at this point in time, the other part of that is that all these lawyers are filing all these... They're filing every motion that... at this point in time, they're putting quarters in bubblegum machines getting motions out. They're peeling bazooka bubblegum and reading Bazooka Joe comics to try to come up with some sort of a motion to file. Because every one of these lawyers know that once they lose this case, he will be suing them. For legal malpractice or the like. But for now, it looks like the trial will go forward beginning a week from... Wait, what? Yeah, 2 weeks from yesterday? Yeah. Because I'm actually, just a little program note, the plan is for me to not be here on the 15th, the day the trial opens, and be back on the road to home on the 16th after my appointment. So there's that. So jury selection will begin on the 15th. And then before all the shit hit the fan yesterday, I was watching my Filthy Morning Habit, our Filthy Morning Habit. And I heard briefly that he'd found somebody to write his bond. And Steve wrote to me and said, the bond... Getting a bond from a car financier rather than some fancy bank is definitely something a reputable business person and very rich man would do. And, by the way, he looks awful in this photo from The Guardian. I'm thinking these lawsuits and his criminal stuff are taking their toll, and I love it. He's feeling the pressure. Stoke the stroke, y'all. And, of course, this is always merits a reference to the sage of South Carolina, Stan. Y'all, he ain't gonna make it. And by the way, Matt in San Francisco, I'm glad you got your Hart tickets. That's going to be fun. Matt told me yesterday, I got second row center seats for Hart at Chase Center in San Francisco in September. I had to go from my phone to the desk to due to some glitch, which may have been the difference between first row and second, but that's kind of my thing. Instead of being happy about second row center, let's focus on, I wonder if first row was available 45 seconds ago. As Tara says, my mind is a scary place. It's not wise to go there alone. P.S. A husband knows better not to ask how much the tickets cost. Well, I mean, it's not like you haven't sacrificed. You went to Air Supply, Matt. And as far as I'm concerned, that's taken one for the team. But I mentioned the bond because, whoopsie, turns out there was some bad lawyering on the bond. Documents related to it, the $175 million bond, were returned for correction because his pettifoggers screwed up the financial statement. You know, you'd think a guy with $464 million in judgments against him from the fraudulent financial statements would maybe be a little careful. No. It's just like a... Sorry about dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. It's just like a dog returning to his vomit. That's all. As of today, the bond undertaking was returned for correction. Another reporting system said it had been rejected. An expert in local bonding issues, a lawyer by the name of Jeffrey Levine, noted, the court has returned the documents listed below for the following reasons. Please include a current financial statement and power of attorney. Additionally, please list the name of the attorney in fact under the signature line on the undertaking. Oh, it's an undertaking form. Someday there will be a much, much more enjoyable one of those. Please use the refile document link for doc number 1707 to resubmit the corrected filing. Thank you and have a great day. So he can, thank you for that, Ralphs. He can't even file a bond to cover his fraud disgorgement verdict without either committing fraud or screwing up. By the way, with the gag order in place, he is now actively attacking Judge Marchand's daughter by name. Yeah, really? Using coded language to call her a bitch this time. This was a real Lulu.
Judge Juan Marchand is totally compromised and should be removed from this Trump non-case immediately. His daughter Lauren is a rabid Trump hater. Was admitted to having conversations with her father about me, and yet he gagged me. She works for Crooked Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Adam Shifty Schiff, and other radical leftists who campaign on getting Trump and fundraise off the Biden indictments, including this witch hunt, which her father presides over, a total conflict, and attacking Biden's political opponent through the courts. Former DA Cy Vance refused to bring this case, as did all federal agencies, including elections.
By the way, I'm pretty sure that the Rattle Trap meme stock continues to tank. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, a little something happened regarding the Trump Media and Technology Group trading as DJT on NASDAQ. That's an unpaid product placement for NASDAQ. If I were NASDAQ, I would not be particularly thrilled that they were on it, because everything Trump touches dies. But lo and behold, in what can only we can only hope is a sign of things to come, two investors have already pleaded guilty to insider trading on the MAGAT merger. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Damian Williams, who is the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, announced today that Michael Schwartzman and Gerald Schwartzman, Schwartzman and Schwartzman, have entered guilty pleas to a single count of securities fraud because they came up with a harebrained scheme to make money off the merger between Digital World Acquisition and Trump Media. Damian Williams, in a statement, said, Michael and Gerald Schwartzman admitted in court that they received confidential inside information about an upcoming merger between DWAC and Trump Media, and used that information to make profitable but illegal open market trades. Insider trading is cheating, plain and simple, and today's conviction should remind anyone who may be tempted to corrupt the integrity of the stock market. I don't know how you say integrity of the stock market, and don't laugh out loud, that it will earn them a ticket to prison. These two geniuses bought millions of dollars of Digital World Acquisition securities before the news broke of the merger, and then they tipped others to do the same, even though they'd signed a non-disclosure agreement. Yeah. CNN reported, there was no allegation in the indictment that Trump himself had any involvement in the alleged insider trading scheme. We do like a surprise ending, though, don't we? And that trash stock is still in Crashville. Question for this prayer meeting Wednesday is prayer in order for Clanny Granny. Would you? Could you? Might you be so inclined? Because Clanny Granny, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, had surgery. She had a blood clot removed and a stent put in. She was diagnosed with May-Thurner syndrome. And that is a disorder that is prone to striking women of childbearing age between the ages of like 25 and 45. It's apparently brought on by dehydration, travel, and extended periods of sitting. Those are all identified factors leading to it. So, I don't know. Maybe Sporkfoot should have invited her to the gym a little more often. And Clanny Granny said, I want to thank Dr. Rebecca Bade and the entire team at UC Health Medical Center of the Rockies for their great care and providing helpful insight on my recent diagnosis. I'm looking forward to making a full recovery and getting back to Congress to continue fighting for Colorado for at least a few more months before they bounce me out on my ass. Oh, wait, I added that part. But here's the best part. This is what makes it actually a news story. George Anthony DeVolder Santos, Catherine the Great of Russia, chimed in because drama queen and said, I want to thank God for the blessing he gave my dear friend. Lauren underwent a surgery and has come out on the other end of it and is doing well. It's everyday heroes like these, meaning the medical staff. I don't think they're everyday heroes. George Anthony, there's a lot of learning and studying and schooling and training that goes into being that everyday hero. It's everyday heroes like these that we need to be thanking every day. Well, you know, you need to thank your everyday heroes every day. But the goddess of irony had George in her palm, because he then wrote to Lauren and her family, God bless you all and rest up because you have a lot of fighting to do. Mentioned that to Annette, and she said, is that before or after her boy gets out of prison? Ha! Actually, the family fighting is what probably led to some of the stress that may have helped create the blood clot. Who knows? Out there, bro. It's like the Boebert clan are taking Dexatrim, and they're just out there in the yard scratching and fighting. Oh, well. And then there's what happened over the weekend with Nitwit Nero. Yesterday. He was in Wisconsin. And he kind of lost the thread in an anti-immigrant rant. He was at a rally in Green Bay last night, and he said, and this is a quote, and, well, let's not count on me. Let's get this straight from the horse's ass's mouth.
If your constitutional rights have been violated, we will defend you. If you have illegal aliens invading your home, we will deport you.
You got that? One more time.
Constitutional rights have been violated. We will defend you. If you have illegal aliens invading your home, we will deport you.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Nitwit Nero has, and it's been documented, undocumented immigrants working at MAGA Loco. Do we get to deport him? Because you know that every tacky golf motel he has, that bedbug-infested shithole at MAGA Loco. He lives on cheap, undocumented immigrant labor. Yeah, Brian Tyler Cohen merely noting, off to bed with you, Grandpa. And back in 2019, there was an article in the Washington Post in which the Post noted that the Trump Organization, which is presently almost permanently monitored in the state of New York, the Trump Organization had a roving crew of Latin American employees working on everything from masonry and maintenance at his winery and various golf motels all over the country without legal status.
We will deport you.
One word. Matt in San Francisco, Boebert and Dexatrim, they can afford black beauties now that they're fancy. Yeah, they can. Black beauty. No yellow jackets? Thank you, Ralphs. From Michael Popak at Midas Touch, the bonding company for Nitwit Nero, you know, the car sales outfit, is the one that needs to submit its financials. And thank you for the clarification. And Emilio points out, we will defend you. Is 45 selling a home security system now? If it does, it won't work. A little storm levity, Lee in New York points out. From Gilligan's Island, this is the Howells talking.
Well, Professor won't let me listen to the radio. I'm terribly sorry, darling.
But I'm on the trail of something very, very important.
But the professor's wasting his time. On a tycoon. No, dear, that's a typhoon. You see, a tycoon, that's a man with money, like myself. A typhoon is a big bag of wind.
Thurston.
Never mind what you're thinking. No comment. Oh, that's good.
I'd forgotten about that one. And let's see. Yeah, exactly. Randy Radar said a disaster area declaration may mean that all the municipal buildings facilities get rebuilt, but that the people are hung out to dry. Well, back when the derecho hit, we learned the hard way just how helpful FEMA was. So, okay, that's good, Lee. Nero speaking in code. Was it his version of Morse code?
Bing, bong, bong. Bing, bing, bong, bong. Bing, bong, bing, bang, bong, bong, bong.
Uh-huh. Oh, and I, oddly enough, I went to get the mail Monday morning, and I reached in and pulled out the usual stack of list of, you know, people wanting money. I'm just the middle woman, okay? And, you know, the list is long, as usual, monthly bills. And I found a flyer that's already gone out for a guy named Marshall Clay. His real name is Marshall. It's not like Marshall Dillon. No, his name's Marshall Clay. He's running for House of Delegates in the same House district I am. And there's photographs of him on this big old mailer. And it's interesting because in his logo, the A in Clay has the, you know that four-pointed star that they use? Is it four-pointed for NATO? Oh, that's in the A in Clay. Maybe it's supposed to be a cross. Serving others is at the center of everything Marshall Clay does. Necessarily, we're talking, he's running on the Republican side. Oh, dear. You got an idea where this is going?
U.S. Navy veteran Marshall retired as senior chief petty officer after...
That's halfway to a John Wayne impression.
After nearly 21 years of service to our great country, he has continued this call to duty by serving, I said duty, the Sergeant-at-Arms in the West Virginia House of Delegates for the past 8 years. Essentially, the head of security in our state's legislature.
Essentially. essentially is doing a lot of work there.
Keeping order and allowing the people's work to be done safely, efficiently, and productively. It is with this same dedication to service and passion for making the state and country he loves stronger, safer, better, Marshall has decided to run to be our next delegate to the West Virginia House.
Then you turn it over and you find out what his agenda is. Oh dear.
Conservative Republican Marshall Clay will fight for what matters most.
Well, let's find out what matters most. What's the first thing that Marshall Clay mentions that matters most?
Proudly supporting President Trump and his Make America Great Again policies.
Okay, what's second most important?
Protecting life in all forms, including the unborn.
Really? I think I can have an argument over that.
Advancing American and West Virginian energy independence.
Even though Jumbo Justice just vetoed a bill that would have allowed companies like Appalachian Power and Monongahela Power to double the amount of solar energy that they can generate in West Virginia, because Jumbo Justice said that in no way, shape, form, or fashion am I going to sign no bill into law what's going to hurt my coal holdings. I love my coal mines. I love for you to pay for that coal.
Continuing tax relief for working class families.
That's another way of saying providing tax relief for people who, West Virginians, who make at least $500,000 a year.
Supporting increased penalties for drug dealers.
How's that working out? We got lots of penalties for drug dealers. What we don't have lots of is treatment for addiction. And people like Marshall Clay throw fits over things like needle exchanges. Remember the other day when Matt said, tell me about it? You go in to get a grant and you can't even say needle exchange? That.
Improving the mental health system in West Virginia.
How?
Continuing to improve the safety of our schools.
Again, by what means? I mean, does school safety include not letting the cishet students beat the living hell out of and bully the life out of LGBTQ plus kids? Pretty sure it doesn't.
Increasing the transparency of the West Virginia school system.
Now, some of our schools are so falling down that they're practically transparent already. And then, of course, you knew it had to be there, right?
Keeping women's restrooms and locker rooms use is strictly for naturally born women.
I find this one particularly hilarious because they keep having to go back and retool and revamp and reword their transmedia. So, a naturally born woman, huh? I guess that lets out the girls who were conceived via IVF, doesn't it? Or how about Banquo? Was it Banquo in the Scottish play? Who dropped the knowledge on Macbeth? Because Macbeth thought that he was unbeatable. Because the witches told him he could never be defeated by any man of woman born. No, it was Macduff. It was Macduff. Who said, I was pulled untimely from my mother's womb. Well, I guess the C-section girl babies are going to be out on that one, too. And then finally,
continuing to enhance the business climate and grow economic opportunity for all.
Except it's not for all. He's down with running some of all out of this state. I'm not talking about the coal and gas companies either. Then down on the other end it says, with the values we can trust. This guy's apparently got a fucking war chest.
Pro Trump.
That's the first thing on his list. Not pro West Virginia. Not pro hillbilly.
Pro Trump.
And he's a veteran for veterans. And he's pro-life. And pro-Second Amendment. Which is, oddly enough, in direct conflict with being pro-life. And he's pro-family. As long as the families are white and cis and het and straight and Christian. Pro-coal and the gas industry. Why does the gas industry get a definite article, but there's no the coal? Pro-jobs and economic growth. Yeah, let's build another Dollar General. Pro-education and increased opportunity for our young people. Yeah, as long as we break the unions and give the school money to religious schools. I mean, I know how these people. I'm not going to have the war chest he has come November. No, come September when the real campaign gets going. Hope to have some, though. And what I really want is a chance to take that on, because there's nobody running against me in my primary now. It was through a sad occurrence that is a fact. But he does have competition. But there's one thing that's absolutely true in regard to this. For West Virginia House District 51, on November 5th, there will only be one candidate who is absolutely no compromise when it comes to women's rights, to determine how best to take care of our bodies. Whether it be abortion care, whether it be access to contraception, whether it be within the terminology of abortion care, access to mifepristone, and whether it be IVF, reproductive care, no compromise. There is not a single man, let alone Marshall Clay, in the state of West Virginia who has a single damned thing to say about how women manage their bodies, okay? That's it. Bottom line. Men in this state want to go off and grunt and bark and scratch themselves and fart and pick their noses at the same time and talk about how much they love their dick hardening pills and should probably be subsidized by insurance. I ain't got no dog in that hunt. But keep your filthy minds and your filthy hands off of women's bodies. And so that'll be the choice in November. Me, no compromise on women's rights. Or some dude who thinks he knows better how women need to take care of our own bodies. I think women outnumber men in this county. Not saying, just saying. Marshall Clay, says Steve in New York, serving West Virginia citizens. It's a cookbook! to serve West Virginians. What you want is a real good mopping sauce for them while they're slow roasting. Thanks for that, Steve. That was well played. So we are into the second hour of the program. Fundraising goal stands at $300. However much we can take that down by is critically important, not for the campaign, but for just keeping this program on the air and making it possible for me to do the things I have to do. Health insurance premium. I got a bill from Appalachian Power the day before the tornadoes hit. And this month, they want $674, and they want it by the 13th. So, fingers crossed. Then the usual for the phone bill and the usual for the, well, water bill, because, you know, we've got to service those stock, those shareholders. Water bill runs about $135 to $150 a month. I know. Fun, huh? And on and on and on and on. So all help is good help. And the PayPal button is at headon.live. The Patreon, if you want to go through Patreon, the Patreon access portal is under the Contribute tab. I saw this earlier today. Merle sent it in as well. It just drip, 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 drip. I remember when Fat Dead Rush Limbaugh, my friends, ow! Pineapple, my friends, in my formerly nicotine-stained fingers. But he used to drip, drip, drip about Bill Clinton. Well, there's some drip, drip, drippity drip going on here. Turns out that Trump media got its bacon saved in 2022 by a Russian American and the entity was called ES Family Trust. And it provided an emergency loan to Trump Media, who then opened an account with an outfit called Paxum Bank in the Caribbean on the island of Dominica. Guess where they provide most of their money to? I mean, do you have to guess? The porn industry, of course. So it turns out ES Family Trust is basically a shell company for a Russian-American businessman named Anton Postolnikov. He owns Paxum Bank. And here's the best part. He's been under investigation by the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security in regard to the loan for Trump Media for insider trading and money laundering. Documents that have emerged indicate that Paxum Bank shows Postolnikov has access to the trust's account. The papers that created the trust show that its settlor is a lawyer in St. Petersburg, Petrograd, Mother Russia. And ES Family Trust, as it turns out, based on the paperwork, may have completed a transaction that Paxum Bank couldn't. Paxum Bank doesn't have a United States banking license. It is not under the regulatory scope of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And so it looks like is Antonin Postolnikov shuffled some money around so that ES Family Trust could provide the money when Paxum Bank couldn't. In answer to the article, the people at Trump Media said...
The Guardian continues to propagate its false narrative that TMCG has these fake connections to Russia. It is a hoax. Litigation will continue on this point, and we are confident that The Guardian will ultimately be held responsible for its defamation, and this story should be retracted.
Only thing is, Gospodin Postolnikov is among those names on search warrant affidavits, along with several of his associates. And one of those associates was indicted last month for money laundering and had previously been charged with insider trading. Gee, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Okay, Randy Radar, that's clever. Make America Gorky again. Ha! Clever. Oh, let's see here. Do you remember, since it is Wednesday, you remember we've talked about that grifter in Mount Juliet, Tennessee? His name's Greg Locke, and he was a big-time grifter on the anti-vax scene during the pandemic. Well, right before their Easter services this past Sunday, you know, I guess they managed to have them even though we transed Easter. Damn it. His grift is called Global Vision Bible Church. Who knows? At about 6 a.m. before they started their services, well, the local cops got a report of a trailer fire in an intersection outside the church, according to the Wilson County Sheriff's Office. When we say trailer fire, I don't think we're talking about a structure in which people live. This sounds more like a, I don't know, U-Haul or maybe one of those flatbeds you carry your riding lawnmower on. But yeah, it was on fire. The fire was extinguished. There were no injuries. But the Wilson County Sheriff's Office said the trailer had been dropped off in the middle of the intersection and then intentionally set on fire. Here's the punchline. The trailer was full of Bibles. According to Pastor Greg Locke, it was 100% directed at my church. There's probably 200 Bibles on the trailer. It blocked the entrance to our campus, and the fact that it was an entire load of Bibles is rather conclusive proof that it was most assuredly directed at us. It did not, nor will it stop us. It was cleaned up in time for people to drive into the parking lot. We had a full house and a marvelous service. Here's the thing, though. Pastor Greg Locke, by the way, his wife left him because, well, allegations of domestic abuse. He was present, Greg Locke was, on January 6, 2021 in Washington, D.C. But he didn't go in. But in the past, there at the Global Vision Bible Church, they've held book burnings of their own. Because of witchcraft. Yeah. That's a great question, Emilio. Was the trailer filled with Trump Bibles? Well, that would be even funnier, because that would mean that some schmucks actually shelled out money for Trump Bibles. I'm guessing it was probably a conspiracy of going from room to room at various and sundry Super 8 motels and Motel 6s and just collecting all those Gideon Bibles. They'll happily replace them. Yeah. And I don't know if you caught this, but Nitwit Nero, who is still just absolutely beside himself over the fact that March 31st is the Transgender Day of Visibility and Easter happened to fall on March 31st, has declared that
this year, 2024, on November 5th, will be Christian Visibility Day, when all the Christians come out to vote for me, your orange savior.
I wish I was kidding. But no, he did. And, you know, he had the usual ugly things to say about trans people. It's exhausting. But today, in persecution of the Christians, look for this to drive them bananas anytime soon. It's a story. The story has something to do with Corbin Albert. She's a women's professional soccer player. And she played her college soccer at the University of Notre Dame. And she reposted a video of a young man with an intellectual disability talking during a church sermon about stopping his gender transition. And the individual went on to talk about his struggles with homosexuality. Huh? And feeling transgender. And so Corbin Albert, for reasons that aren't abundantly clear, reposted that. Go figure. And apparently Corbin Albert is a genuine God-botherer. One of those people who thumps their Bible and never manages to get it open to read. Back, 2023, over the 4th of July, she's in a video with her family and said, "Our pronouns are the USA." And then she liked a meme that said, "God taking time off performing miracles to make sure Megan Rapinoe sprains her ankle in her final ever game." Don't screw with Megan Rapinoe, because she will make you regret it. She came after Corbin Albert. That seems a very masculine name. I don't know. But I'm proud of Megan Rapinoe. She said, for people who want to hide behind my beliefs, I'll just ask one question. Are you making any type of space safer, more inclusive, more whole? Any semblance of better, bringing the best out of anyone? And she said, because if you aren't, all you believe in is hate. And kids are literally killing themselves because of this hate. Wake the fuck up, yours truly, number 15. Because that was Megan Rapinoe's number on the U.S. Women's National Team before she retired. And now, Corbin Albert, Corbin Dallas? I don't know. Wears the same number. And went on and said, for all my trans homies enduring this horrific treatment day in and day out, I see you, and I hear you, and I am with you. I'm proud of her. I'm proud of Megan Rapinoe, and I'm grateful to her. And her teammates, Becky Sauerbrunn, Lynn Williams, Sam and Christy Mewis, Allie Krieger, Alana Cook, Merritt Mathias, Abby Dahlkemper, and Megan Klingenberg, all stood up and spoke up in support of Megan Rapinoe. And then Corbin Albert realized she had done took a big old steaming dump in her nest. And last week she said, I want to sincerely apologize for my actions on social media. Liking and sharing posts that are offensive, insensitive, and hurtful was immature and disrespectful, which was never my intent. Oh, hush. It was too. I'm really disappointed in myself, and I'm deeply sorry for the hurt that I've caused to my teammates, other players, fans, friends, and anyone who was offended. Oh, great. Non-apology apology to the people she actually offended. I truly believe that everyone should feel safe and respected everywhere and on all playing fields. I know my actions have not lived up to that, and for that I sincerely apologize. It's an honor and a privilege to get to play this sport on the world stage, and I promise to do better. Tell you what, Corbin. Visit with some parents of trans kids. Hell, if you can't be bothered to do that, run over to Hulu, Corbin. There's a little series over there from Australian Film, Film Australia. It's a TV series. It's called First Day. It's about a little girl in Australia. So you don't have to really care about her because she's not American. A little trans girl in Australia who is in transition and is living full time. And the bigotry she faces even there, which is, you know, generally somewhat more humane than we are here, and certainly more so than they are on Turf Island. But, you know, maybe she's learning. Maybe she can spend more time learning from Megan Rapinoe than trying to emulate Riley Grimes or whatever her name is. That would be nice. Yeah, I know. Darlene in Connecticut, disgraceful to wish a remarkable female athlete that she break her ankle. Vile. Just vile. Absolutely vile. Darlene adds, heavy rains and high winds here now. Really high winds. It's the same system, Darlene. Plan appropriately and accordingly. I hope you've already got a place set aside for you and the babies. Some scary, scary shit. But yeah, it was vile. And I have a feeling that U.S. Women's National Team may have had a little, well, sit down, come to Jesus talk with her. Back to Easter, Lee in New York says, what will the Christians do when they find out that Eastern Orthodox Easter is on, wait for it, Cinco de Mayo? Oh my. Tequila. But next year's Easter is going to be next year's Roman Easter is going to be an absolute party for the maggots and the white wingers because it falls on Hitler's birthday. You know, they're going to just love that. Note coming in from Wave. Literary pre-release work of fiction. Greetings from Magathon, live from the Florida Fleas, fleeing America. I'm writing this and demoing this on the horn. This is my way of giving back from all the horn has given me. Bob, then Robin, now Roxanne, have always been my beacon, my lodestone, my North Star. Shut up, Pence. Nobody's checking for you. I always thought I'd do something with the horn in its wake, and today I woke up with a head full of words, impressions, and creativity. The moon is less than a third, so this creative pulse has to be attributed to that creative matrix that escapes most, but that pesters and torments the gifted, paging Mr. Hemingway. This transmitted is a work of fiction, a comedy, an essay, a deep dive, as they say. These words have been bouncing round my head, dialogue, cinematic, sound design. I write this note in a First Amendment fervor, Dune is menace if you're a creative, all whilst having my phone device under an eavesdropping warrant. Seriously, I'll explain later. And maybe this will provide some cover should this ever go to trial. Heavens, maybe the patina of mental illness will provide some cover, or maybe I just consigned myself to decaf coffee and forced bingo games, but I digress. My grand old auntie, 90-something at this writing, always knew that I was a writer. Truth is, yeah, it's the only thing I do in this life without prompt or effort. The head injury quelled this. Words don't sound good in my head, and when I powered through, they just fermented and soured on the page, indicating that I was broken and burnt somehow, almost aligning to the external diagnosis of burnt-out drug addict. This was never, ever true. I had massive amounts of brain damage, life-changing brain damage. I lived on the edges and shadows until I repaired and healed. Almost a decade and a half, I was here, the place that I dreamed of, the place where I was the last time America made sense, September 10th, 2001. My dreams died that day. Despite all the terrorist shenanigans and Republican-led chicanery of that day, my cloak failed. My shadow life and alternative existence evaporated, and instinctively and correctly thought that online group, this right here are the recollections of alternative personalities, online groups dedicated to explosives and bomb-making, but especially clandestine psychedelic chemistry, disbanded, dissolved, did a space build shoot. Yeah, I was not here. We did not discuss shit. Y'all a bunch of felons. Poof. The new war on terror reminded us, all of us, mostly stateside butterflies, that we were not invisible anymore. To paraphrase the streets, they coming for everybody. All the stories, formulas, and tutorials disappearing into the vapors until about 2014, in a show called Breaking Bad, hypothetical speaking, of course. You seen that show? Fuck yeah. Somebody snitching. For real, for real. Didn't you say that shit was blue? Yep. Click. Something fiction has to make sense. And in reality, first to snitch, first to be executive producer, I suppose. They weren't even doing Shulgin shit, just bullshit meth. Basic ass peer-to-peer, no skill whatsoever. Once you get past the phosphine reaction, purple killing cloud, easy cheesy. Now Molly, specifically Shulgin Formula 109, was hard. It had the extra step of all the precursors being Watch Level 1, HSI, ATF, and DEA in home visits. Up, diddles. Wave. The world at that time was just learning to love pills with smiles and designer logos on them, emergency fast-acting antidepressants, the most sought-after molecules since and somewhere in 2001. Leaping over mountains of texts and tomes of depositions, we were learned, liberal, chaotic anarchists. We were the priests of better living through chemistry. All you need is love. Here, eat this. See? Love. To be continued. Next, Molly at the end of the world. Wave, Allen Ginsberg could not have done better. I saw the best minds of my generation, angel-headed hipsters, etc., etc., etc. I just need to know that you're safe. Please, please, Wave, be safe. It's good to hear from you, friend. Now, we're halfway through the program, and we're still trying to break the goose egg. Thanks to anyone who cares to do that. And speaking of dispatches, I had a dispatch earlier today from Joey. Oh, wait, I've got a... And Giraffe and Joey Jr., I had a note from Micah. What kind of power draw are you doing that costs that much? Damn, coal's expensive. That's the thing. I can sit here and tell you right now exactly what's drawing power here. One router, one thingamajig that runs the router, one mix desk, one PC, a bank of uninterruptible power supplies, several LED light bulbs, a washing machine, a dryer, a refrigerator, and a stove, and three, count them, three little space heaters. That's it. And $674. They say it, and I pay it. That's all there is to it. Micah says, I mean, I run a couple of bona fide high-power servers with redundant power supplies, and my bill ain't anywhere near that high. Well, your energy consumption probably has a mix of wind and solar and, hell, maybe geothermal, possibly hydro. I mean, you are near a rather large body of water. Here, we got coal. And we got coal barons to maintain in the lifestyle to which they have become accustomed, and we got shareholders which has to be serviced like a pharaoh of old. Yeah, here in West Virginia we're just all one big harem to some coal company and power company executives. I mean, it sure feels that way. But as I said, we got a note from Joey. The orange man loves the green. Giraffery, the African-American International Giraffe, starts off the program with a tribute to a great African-American. On this day, back in 1968, Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his last speech. I've been to the mountaintop at Mason Temple in Memphis, Tennessee. King ominously mentioned threats against his life. Sadly, MLK was shot the next day. Joey remembers... I was 6 years old on that day, and I remember my mother talking on the phone and crying with a close friend. Must be really sad to see your mama cry. I cry sometimes when I think of Mom back in the Serengeti. Mama went back home after Clockwork Orange became president in 2016. Clockwork Orange. Clockwork Orange.
Yes, Glockwork Orange is a reference to Trump and his love of the NRA, not to mention the fact that Trump always shoots himself in the foot like he did last night in Green Bay.
Oh, Joey, too. In my country, we don't have any gun problems because we got rid of all the assault-type rifles back in the late 90s.
Yes, any significant efforts for serious gun legislation are always shot down by the right-to-life hypocrites. They seem to care more about their guns than their kids.
Yes, Junior, a five-year-old does not understand when they watch their mother cry. However, speaking of guns, the sadness only continued during that period of time because just 2 months later, my mother and I would sit crying together on the couch when we watched the funeral for RFK on the television after he was shot in June of that summer. I really did not understand the magnitude of what was happening, but I was just so sad to see my mother weeping while watching the television. Speaking of crying parents, I think RFK Sr. is probably crying watching his son's antics today.
Great point, Junior. I think I would shoot myself if you ever went rogue like RFK has in the past few years with his disgusting attempt to sabotage democracy. Somewhere I can hear Lloyd Benson eloquently stating, RFK Jr., I knew your father. RFK, and you, sir, are no RFK. You, sir, are a total embarrassment to your father's name and for which it stood. So why don't you pack up your dog and baloney show and hit the roid?
Reference to steroids. Thank you, Giraffe. You mentioned the idiot RFK. Did you happen to mention another idiot KFR?
Well, that's a good point, Junior, considering we're speaking of guns and idiots. The reverse of RFK is KFR, and KFR is a reference to the one and only despicable little punk, Kyle Fucker Rittenhouse. I mention the little asshole because recently Kent State University has decided that he should be a keynote speaker at an upcoming event on their campus. I don't know whose brilliant idea that was to have a shooter speak at the university, considering the infamous May 4th shootings that killed four students back in 1970. Shame on Kent State.
I will offer editorially, I don't think the invitation was extended by Kent State. I'm pretty sure this is Young Gun Humpers of America or some other similar garbage organization buying space and time in order to deliberately inflame the campus.
Great points, Jeffrey and Junior. Speaking of my mother crying, I remember May 4th, 1970, my father came home from Kent State that day as he was working on his master's degree at the time. No words were spoken as my father walked in the door and embraced my mother. I could tell they both were very upset, but I did not know why. With tears in her eyes, my mother attempted to very delicately explain to me that four students were killed that day. That's one of those moments in life that I will never forget. I just cannot believe that Kent State would have Kyle Rittenhouse speak on campus. I come from the land down under. However, what Kent State is doing is a low-down, underhanded manipulation. I'm very disappointed. In my country, we put our weapons with our down-gunder program from the land down under. Great points, all indeed. Also, on this day back in 1973, the first mobile phone call was made. Standing in Midtown Manhattan, Martin Cooper of Motorola placed a call from a mobile handheld to Joel Engel of Bell Labs in New Jersey. The invention of cell phones had been completed, and for the next 20 years, cell phones would be primarily used in cars. I think it's very appropriate that these phones are referred to as cell phones, since Trump will soon be sitting in a cell somewhere trying to conduct rallies on his cell while in a cell.
Well, Junior, we can only hope that justice does prevail and Trump ends up where he belongs, behind bars. As I mentioned earlier, Trump spoke last night in Green Bay and told numerous lies, as he always does. It was ironic to see Trump speak in Green Bay, as there is some symbolism there. Trump needs a lot of green to keep the long arms of the law at bay.
Okay.
His buddy, Peter Navarro, just went to jail for his contemptuous part in the January 6th insurrection. One could say that Peter Navarro traded his Green Bay sweep conspiracy. Yes, Navarro swapped his Green Bay sweep for a gray bar suite. As I said last night in Green Bay, a city of approximately 100,000, Trump held a rally where he began the evening walking on stage with Lee Greenwood's Proud to Be an American, that's God Bless the USA, blaring in the background.
The orange man seems like to like the color green as he played Lee Greenwood in Green Bay.
Well, great point, Junior. Yes, the orange man likes Greenwood, Green Bay, and Green Box.
Did they mention the part of the song that refers to all the military men that died for Trump's First Amendment right to call them suckers and losers?
Great point, Junior.
We learned about a great president who once stated that he would speak softly and carry a big stick. Trump is now the president that speaks loudly and carries a big shtick.
Wonderful job, Junior. Yes, last night, Trump in his bombastic manner endlessly lied about infrastructure. He tried to blame Biden for the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse. The reality, Biden has taken great strides with his wonderful infrastructure legislation, which will rebuild this country, as opposed to Trump's endless ruse of
Infrastructure Week,
which was more like Infrastructure W-E-A-K. Trump brought up the border numerous times as he claimed immigrants were committing unprecedented continual crime in this country. Actually, the reality is Trump has probably committed more crimes than all the immigrants put together. Finally, Trump stated he would not touch Social Security and Medicare. This is a major falsehood, considering that several of his previous budgets were submitted to Congress and had deep cuts to Medicare and Social Security.
They need to put this orange idiot under the jail as soon as possible. No, they need to put him down under the jail. Ha! So, this has been Joey's Journal for Prayer Meeting Wednesday, the third day of April, with Giraffrian Jr., hoping that the orange man child who loves green will soon listen to Green Day's song, American Idiot. And so there's a $25 Gray Bar Sweet Challenge on the table here as we move toward the third hour of the program. And Ralph said, I'm kicking in $25 for Joey Giraffery, Joey Jr., and Joey 2 the Kangaroo. Thank you, Ralph. Thank you. That's so sweet. And so that gets us down to $250 to go, which is fantastic. Billable, is Giraffery Jr., is Jeffrey Jr. related to the Geico lizard? He sure sounds like him. Listen, leave my side gigs out of this, okay? Damn it, Billable, you said you wouldn't say anything. Robin, tell us the truth. You consume gigawatts of electricity by keeping your Olympic-sized, pancreas-shaped swimming pool heated at a constant temperature of 80 degrees. That is just not true. It's been concreted in. We can't even raise the money to start re-excavating it. The gunite contractors alone are going to be, just getting the estimate is breathtaking. I think you did. Billable Rick asking, damn, did Joey set a record for cowbells with this journal? Did I hear six? Well, a couple of them, the llama was kind of tired, Billable. She wasn't feeling her absolute best. Sometimes that Joey, well, and Giraffrey, you know, the children don't need that kind of role modeling. Joey, too, and Jeffrey Jr. Everybody knows where the energy's going. Power bill is so high. Oh, yeah, Kincaid, says Amelia. But you didn't mention the 12 ultra-high-power tanning beds for Annette's various cabana boys. How many times do I have to explain the masseur, the pool boy, the cabana boy, the cabana, the Gulfstream 5, the hangar, the Maybach, and the Olympic-sized, pancreas-shaped swimming pool are gone? Good Lord, I wouldn't have made it to air today. If the Olympic-sized pancreas-shaped swimming pool was still here, I would have been skimming debris out of the net, out with a net out of the pool, and probably no small number of chickens. We have neighbor chickens, and neighbor turkeys, and neighbor peafowl, and neighbor guinea fowl, and neighbor ducks. Neighbor roosters. And what worries us most, neighbor Rottweilers, who are not friendly, by the way. Yeah, come here, buddy.
This has turned into an interesting episode, hasn't it? Well, if you like it, feel free to leave a review on the podcast. That's always helpful. Let's see. Anything on the... No? I was just thinking about, the broadcast schedule. No, everything should be good tomorrow and Friday. And then again, program note, because I do these at the front end and the back end, and sometimes people don't hear it because, you know, fast forward. I will be away from the microphone on the 15th of April, a week from this coming Monday. And depending on how the appointment on the 16th of April goes, may be away from the mic for that too. It all depends on how fast I can drive back for 4.5 hours. And I know that makes no temporal or mathematical sense, but depends on road conditions and traffic and everything between North Carolina and here. Cross your fingers, y'all. Ah, what else? Because one of the things you can do when you... let me check here. Wow. That'd be beautiful. Nadia said, my power bill since my solar panels is $14 a month, and that's just for the meter. I have net metering and a battery backup. Got a federal tax credit. Since I got my panels, other neighbors did too. It has long been a dream here. Well, yeah, the Gulfstream 5 is gone. Why do you think I don't travel as much as I used to? Lee says, but it was in better shape than Nitwit Nero 757. And any new Boeing. Ooh. Speaking of Boeing. This is indirect. But you know that organized labor is near and dear to my heart. Always will be. Always has been. I was raised by a union family until my dad went into management, which he said was the biggest mistake he ever made. But he preached the union, and he was right. So it was it's probably a couple of months ago now, one of those evenings when I was waxing idyllic about my abiding love for Trader Joe's, and I got a note from Tom in sunny San Rafael saying, yeah, it's a great store, but they've decided they want to be union busters. Because one of the things that the Biden presidency has done, and, yeah, to a certain extent, the Trump presidency in a negative way, was to reinvigorate the organized labor movement in the United States. We talked about the strike going on at, Molson Coors down in Texas. Well, organizing efforts are also taking place at Trader Joe's, and the management of Trader Joe's is not at all happy about it. And the latest front to open up, and it's disappointing to say the very least, when you run across a company, and I've ordered from them in the past, I like them. I've been in their stores. I like going there. REI. They're a co-op. They are at least nominally owned by, you know, customers like a co-op is. But they've decided to go to war with their own employees who would like to have union representation because it turns out that REI is not quite the sweet, kind, and benevolent company that they like the public to think they are. And so it is that I have the story before me of someone named William Littig, who lives in the Chicago suburbs. William Littig, as the HuffPost story points out in an article by Dave Jameson, showed up for work at his REI store on February 21st. It didn't take long for him to realize it would be his last day. Two managers who were visiting from other stores called him into a closed-door meeting. One of them read from a paper that turned out to be his termination notice. The manager said that William Littig had been made aware that REI employees were unhappy with store leadership and were discussing ways to effectuate change. That's all code for trying to organize a union. The last words of my friend Wayne were, don't send flowers. If you're in a union, be active in it. If you're not in a union, form one. It's our only hope. So it turned out the manager said that William Littig had not escalated the situation to the appropriate leaders in a timely manner. Oh my God, what gobbledygook language. Littig, on the other hand, said, I told the company within days, and he said he wouldn't sign the letter. And then he took off his green vest and handed in his store keys, walked out the side door after 4.5 years with a company that he actually loved. He got no severance pay, and there was about a week remaining on his health insurance. And it's not like his fellow workers hated him. They didn't. In fact, he was popular with the staff. And as HuffPost went about the process of investigating the claim, and as Steve in New York points out, REI, the moral of the story is this, capitalist gonna capitalist. And labor will take the hindmost, I'll add, unless labor organizes. But REI is responding brutally to the efforts of its workers to gather together in a union and collectively bargain. And as Mr. Jameson points out in his article at HuffPost, workers get fired all the time for trying to organize, and many managers likely meet the same fate for failing to prevent it. What's unusual in Littig's case is that the company was so frank about its reasoning when it fired him. And Littig, 33 years old, said, it sucks. It hurts. I was really personally invested in the company and the staff. Apparently it's a one-way street. And the thing is, he actually dropped the dime on his workers. He told the company they may be attending union meetings. But it wasn't fast enough to suit the suits at REI. They said he waited 3 months. He said, I waited days. They even went so far, REI's management, they found out that it was a week. They said, still too long. You got to tell us immediately. You got to snitch, and you got to snitch quick. There is one aspect of this story that makes me wonder about how quickly if he had told them within 10 minutes, they would have said he should have told them in 5, because William Liddig is non-binary. His sig line to his email said that he accepts all pronouns. Not the pronouns. Workers at that REI store describe REI's behavior as ham-fisted. And the funny thing is, companies will capitalize on good PR. For instance, Forbes has a list of the best brands for social impact. Guess who was number one on that list? That's right, REI. They've made loud noises about how they support racial equity and LGBTQ plus rights, but then when the opportunity comes along, they throw away an LGBTQ plus person, lickety split. The HuffPost article points out that yes, Trader Joe's, and yes, Starbucks, and REI are all doing everything in their power to keep their workers from having a collective voice in their own employment and treatment. One employee of REI said they don't actually believe in their morals. No one thinks REI is going in a good direction. They don't care about the employees. They care about making more money. When contacted, REI said that they didn't care to discuss William Liddig's case, but they said, but we can't. The voice comes in handy when you need a supercilious capitalist asshole. But we can't assure you that terminations only take place after comprehensive investigations, considering such factors as job performance and adherence to existing company policy. Now, that was an email from a company spokescreep. One of the pioneering outfits for union suppression is, of course, Wally World. Because the Walton heirs have to make sure that their stores don't unionize, because that could affect the amount of money that the Walton heirs have for buying chalets in Stade in Switzerland. Apparently, REI has something called the Employee Engagement Partners. And nobody at REI, none of the regular workers, had ever heard of that outfit, of that department or division. But curiously, Walmart has something similar. They literally have a jet, a Gulfstream, a Learjet, who knows, that's fueled and ready and on standby 24/7 in Bentonville, Arkansas, or so it was a few years back. Ready to go with an army of really mean lawyers the instant somebody whispers the word union in the Walmart store over in Busted Knuckle. And so the employee engagement partners showed up to take small group meetings. The funny thing about these small group meetings, workers do not have the right not to attend them. Union organizers had gone into the store, the one in question in the Chicago suburbs, a couple of weeks earlier, and they'd flyered the store, passed out leaflets. Liddig was instructed, as well as other managers, to look extra sharp at any applications to make sure that there was nothing there that could indicate that these were union people trying to salt the workplace. With the organizing underway, Littig said they had a game plan to basically get ahead of it before it grows. In the meeting with the employee engagement partner, a woman named Julia Guest, he told them straight out, "We need better leadership at this store." And he said that's when he said he'd already been told by a worker that there might be union meetings taking place. And Julia Guest said, "Oh, thank you for sharing." Julia Guest, in turn, said, "I have nothing to say. Talk to our PR team, okay? That's great. Hey, have a wonderful day." And they went on, like I said, in the termination letter, said, "You've known about this for 3 months. "No. I only heard about it a week ago, and I told Julia Guest all about it." Well, they said, "Okay, we'll correct the record." Then they said,
"REI expects its managers to take a proactive approach to problem solving."
That means we want you to snitch faster. And they, and it turns out REI has only recently formed their employee engagement partners. They say
our key members of our HR team who foster direct connections with our store employees to better understand and address their needs and concerns.
Well, they need a union, and they're concerned that you're union busting. How's that? Now, there have been job postings at REI for employee engagement partners. The employee engagement partners, apparently pay somewhere between $96,000 and $154,000 a year. That's good money for union busting. And it's a hell of a lot more than the workers earn on the store's floor. They're looking for qualifications that include
hands-on experience supporting business leaders and responding to labor union matters.
One individual who'd been in that store for 17 years said he was floored when Littig got fired. He said of the firing, J.P. Pike did, "I think it's egregiously wrong. If there was anybody I thought was doing their job to the utmost, it was him." And, of course, it's a fact of labor law in this country that a manager, a mid-level manager like William Littig, isn't covered by the National Labor Relations Act, so you can do anything to him you want to. With one professor from UCal Santa Barbara saying that these mid-level managers, who are really more like hourly workers than they are management, have become the company's shock troops in their union busting efforts. Well, I hope that William Littig sues. And I hope William Littig makes a damn bundle. And honestly, What if we said about stores that claim that they can't afford to pay more than minimum wage? If your business model is predicated on paying workers a sub-living wage, your business model is not viable, and you need to go out of business. And so the article notes that the current labor board, because Joe Biden is president, tends to look at labor law and the National Labor Relations Act in a light more favorable to working people. Another one of those little moments where, and God, I'm just going to take a minute and say this. I get so tired. You know, I remember the great purity wars of 2016 and how that led to Nitwit Nero grifting away for 4 long years. And I'm seeing it again. I can't vote for Joe Biden because Palestine. I'm infuriated over Palestine. But if ever there was a case of don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, this is it. I see young people. What do you think? What do you think is going to be better for Palestinians with Nitwit Nero in office? What's going to be better for you? Nothing. It's going to be immensely worse for you, people in Palestine, people all over the damn world. But here we are. I'm going to vote for Bobby Kennedy Jr. Dude, Jesus, Dill Harris. I mean. So, I don't know. Is there an upshot to this story? Maybe. Maybe it's time to withhold our custom from REI, maybe send corporate a note here and there saying, hey, I was shopping for X, you know, a good rain jacket, pair of waterproof boots, something like that. And I used to buy them from REI, but I ain't doing it no more. Because you're a union buster. I may like Trader Joe's, but here's something I know. When I do my grocery shopping at Kroger's, which is far from perfect, I'm at least buying my groceries in a union shop. And consumer decisions treated as moral choices such as that actually go a lot further than saying Joe Biden's bombing the Palestinians. This morning on my filthy morning habit, I saw Twee Elise, I can't remember her last name, I'm tired of hearing spokespeople speak on background for President Biden saying how infuriated he is with Bibi Netanyahu. Do something. And I wonder if she even realizes that there are two competing interests here that they're trying to keep happy at the same time. Namely, the Arab American community and the Jewish American community. Of course, my feeling on the matter is that the members of the Jewish American community who are tankies for Psycho Bibi probably weren't going to be voting for Joe Biden in the first place. I don't know. I don't have polling data. But I know there are a lot of Jewish people in the United States who are absolutely disgusted, horrified, sickened by the rape of Gaza. Which, of course, brings us, well, which brings us to what has happened in the last couple of days in Gaza. We've talked about Chef Jose Andres and World Central Kitchen on a number of occasions because he is a truly good man. He created World Central Kitchen to go to crisis spots all over the globe and do some of that. It's not a Christian organization, but by the same token, they're doing Matthew 25 work, this being prayer meeting Wednesday and all. They're feeding the hungry. They're doing the single most important work of the Gospels. And we all know what happened. Aid workers for World Central Kitchen in Gaza had, with the express consent of Israel, had offloaded foodstuffs from the sea to go in and try to alleviate to at least some small degree the famine in Gaza. People are starving to death. And they're not starving to death because there's no food. They're starving to death because it's a choice that the Israeli government made. And so there were some World Central Kitchen volunteers, aid workers. I don't know that they were volunteers, but they were in cars. And they were traveling in Gaza. They had the complete alleged cooperation of the Israeli military and the Israeli government. And there was a drone hovering overhead. And Chef Andres said that drone targeted the World Central Kitchen workers car by car, systematically. He went on and said they were in clear communication with the IDF, that the IDF knew exactly where the aid workers were and what their movements were. And Chef Andres said this was not a bad luck situation where, oops, we dropped the bomb in the wrong place. Even if we were not in coordination with the IDF, no democratic country and no military can be targeting civilians and humanitarians. They had just overseen the unloading of 100 tons of food brought into Gaza from the improvised seaport. Chef Andres was actually supposed to be in Gaza for it, but he was unable to be there. The Israeli government said they were experiencing severe sorrow. On the other hand, Psycho Bibi put out a video saying, hey, just wanted you to know my hernia surgery went well, and
Well, too bad about those aid workers, huh?
And then, of course, the same thing that comes from the Israeli government every goddamn time they slaughter somebody they ought not. The Israeli military will launch a thorough investigation, which is the functional equivalent of Captain Renault in Casablanca saying, round up the usual suspects. Oh, no, round up twice the number of usual suspects. And so Chef Andres is pulling World Central Kitchen out of Gaza. Israeli ambassador was called in on the carpet and given a dressing down in London. President Biden is furious. And maybe, but in an election year? I'm sorry to even say in an election year, but I mean, that's the reality. The United States of America is in an existential crisis. We will either continue as whatever it is, as the aspirational democracy that we are, or we'll just kiss it all goodbye in November. And I will be as pissed off at any member of the Sparkle Fart Propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Patrol who says, I won't vote for Biden, as I would be at any fucking maggot. Part of solution, part of problem. No middle ground. At least not how I see it. Hell, Biden's going to get his ass handed to him in West Virginia. If anybody could mount a protest vote, it would be me. Just leave it blank on May 14th. And even in November. But I can't do that. As bitter as it may be for some to accept, the best hope that the Palestinians have is Joe Biden. Because Joe Biden has an entire career, a lifetime of service to this country, in which he has seen time after time after time after time how Israel has behaved and has time after time after time continued to support them just the same. And yet now he is at a breaking point. And when a Joe Biden says he is furious at the Israeli government, well, that's saying something. And we may yet pull the plug. We may yet turn off the money spigot. It would be the moral thing to do, beyond a shadow of a doubt. We can make sure nobody goes hungry. We can make sure that that food goes into Gaza and Israel too, as though Israel cannot feed itself. But I heard an idea put forward by I think it was Haas this morning on my Filthy Morning Habit. He said, maybe we need to embargo Israeli goods coming out of the illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. Why does that need to come into America? Now, when a man like that, with that kind of a stature, for all intents and purposes, announces that he has become part of the boycott, diversify, etc. What is it called? BD? I can't. But when people at that level start saying that, it's time to realize that a sea change is taking place. Boycott, divest. Yeah. And it may be the only way to help Israel see reason. Because the vast majority of the warmongering isn't coming from the metropolitan areas of places like Tel Aviv. The bloodthirsty craving for human flesh is coming from the occupied settlements, or the illegal settlements in the occupied West Bank. Those are the ones who want to see blood running as high as a horse's neck. Those are the people who say, from the river to the sea, and that Palestine must be erased. Tens of thousands of people marching in Israel again. Some of them tried to divert to march straight to BDS. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. Boycott, divest, and sanction. But no, ordinary workaday Israeli citizens tried to march on Bibi's house and were stopped forcibly by Israeli security forces. Telling. Let's go over and find out who's on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Can you hear me okay?
I hear you, Darlene. How are you? How's the weather?
It broke for a little bit, so I was able to get the dogs out, which was good. But the winds are unbelievable, and we have, like, ice pellets and stuff falling, and mixed with rain. But nothing compared, you know, to what you experienced. And Kentucky and lower Ohio and, you know, the snow storms that are hitting further north. But it's still, I'm like, oh boy, when are we going to lose power, you know? So I was happy to hear you were back on. First off, I apologize for the last time I called in because...
Why?
A couple of times. Because a couple of times, both of us were talking full sentences over each other, and I could not hear you. I simply couldn't hear you. Maybe I'm doing it again right now.
No, you're not. You're not.
But, okay, I apologize for that because I literally usually, I don't know if my phone, like, cuts out the audio as I'm talking, and I talk kind of slow. And I literally, so I mostly hear you cut in, but those couple of times, it was awful. So I apologize for that.
No,
it's also not matriculating. It's matriculating, matriculating. That was the other thing I was mortified at. But I could go on.
You mortify all too easily.
I do. I do. I mortify. And I'm not a sparkle farter or a purity patrol person. So I agree with you 100%. You know, and I did actually do a dry run. I actually voted in my primary absentee ballot. And today, or yesterday was the day, where we had Connecticut had its primary, a couple of the other New England states did as well. And the voter turnout was piss poor. Joe Biden, you know, and Trump clinched their respective delegates and nominations. The irony is Connecticut pushed its primary up earlier, so it would be more competitive. But the apathy is believed to be because of, you know, the fact that they've already got their nominations. But it's still important to do it. And again, it was a test run, you know, it's a dry run for me for November. Well, I like to kind of get into that mode with.
Just one thing. I mean, were there not down ballot races?
No, not really. No, there weren't very many.
Okay.
It was a presidential primary only. At least that's what I got for a ballot. It was a presidential primary ballot only. I know, I believe Chris Murphy is running for re-election. Last year was down ballot, mostly down ballot. And we actually implemented for the first time early voting. So despite the early voting, the turnout was still not great. I really think that's because of the voter fatigue and, you know, they've already got their nominations. They said it was not competitive, but it was unclear if they meant not competitive in terms of Biden and Trump not having challengers, or if they meant it's not competitive because they've already got their nominations, respective nominations, or a bit of both. I have no idea, but I still went through the effort as an absentee ballot filer. Because I think it's important. You know, I'm because of my disability, I still can't drive, so I won't be able to go to a polling place. So I think it's still important to do it. The other thing, could you hold on 1 second, Robin? I just want to do something very quickly.
Absolutely.
For my dog. It'll take like 2 seconds. Okay, hold on. Okay. Come on, Alfie. It's in the middle of the floor here.
Oh, and while Darlene's doing what she's doing, I just wanted to mention one thing. We were talking about what's at stake in November. Well, over the weekend, Nitwit Nero endorsed a guy named Mark Burns for the 3rd Congressional District in South Carolina. We've mentioned this dangerous clown in the past, but this is a guy, and there's a clip here, not going to run it, but this is a guy who, among other things, has said that he wants the House Un-American Activities Committee to be reinstated, and he wants the House Un-American Activities Committee to have the power of arrest, and he wants the House Un-American Activities Committee with the power of arrest to detain and then execute members of the LGBTQ plus community, and especially the transgenders.
This is some scary shit.
Yeah.
This is some scary ass shit. And I apologize for the dead air there. I know you picked up.
Oh, you're fine.
But my dog is not eating much, and I, you know, if I can try to entice him, try to, like, I'll throw different things into his bowl. But he looks like he wants to eat, so that's good. It's touch and go with him. Your comment about voting or not voting for Biden vis-a-vis what's going on in the Palestinian people.
Well, drives me bananas, Darlene, is the fact that I'm seeing this stuff coming out. You know, these are like, you know, Gen Z trans kids. And
they're saying this?
Yeah.
God. They're, you know why? Because they're young. They're young and kind of stupid politically. I was, you know, back then. But they need to listen to people like you who can see for miles and miles. And even there are some horn listeners that have threatened the same action. And I understand the temptation and the frustration. I do agree with using the primaries and going with the non-committed. I think that was a good move because it did wake Biden up, and they did say through, I think even Karine Jean-Pierre said it, but they said, we hear you. So I think that was very important. When it comes to the general election, it's all hands on deck, and you're going to have to put the differences aside and vote for Joe Biden because Joe Biden, he is, I think, the most consequential president that I, in my lifetime, the most consequential president.
Same.
My dad would probably think FDR and possibly Joe Biden second. To me, I find it hilarious and that the greatest presidents in history that Barack Obama came before Joe Biden. I think that was ridiculous. I think Barack Obama is clearly very important and should be ranked up there very high. But, all I can think of with Barack Obama, and yes, he had some pretty serious obstacles, but so does Joe Biden. But the thing that I think of all the time with President Obama is how he said, those jobs aren't coming back. He kept talking about how the jobs aren't coming back. Well, Joe Biden proved him wrong. The jobs have come back, or certainly some variation on it. But he didn't just throw in the towel from the get-go and say that, we're not going to bother. The jobs aren't coming back. If anyone, and this is what I say to people that are questioning and say, I'm not going to vote. Oh, shit, this wind is serious. You're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to gain any traction. You will not get anywhere with Donald Trump in office. The Palestinian people will be wiped off the face of the earth with Donald Trump as president. And that will be on you. I'm sorry, but it will be. The people that decide, I'm not voting for Joe Biden because of what's going on in Palestine with Palestinian people.
Well,
at least with Joe Biden.
If I may, that's what you were, I think that's 1968. Yeah, I was all of 5 years old, but I'm a student of history. And as Joey alluded to in his journal, the murder, the assassination of Bobby Kennedy. But, it was hell among the yearlings. And you talk about great presidents within our lifetime. Well, LBJ is within my lifetime. And had he not been hamstrung by the Vietnam War, he would be at FDR levels for what he did relative to the Great Society. He made significant inroads in improving people's lives. And in a way, while it's not on the same scale as Vietnam, Darlene, the way that Vietnam became an albatross around LBJ's neck is, the albatross named Israel that's hanging around Joe Biden's is certainly reminiscent. Now, we don't have we're probably not going to have chaos in the streets at the Democratic convention. And no, there's no Eugene McCarthy out there and no Hubert Humphrey contending for an empty White House seat. But some of the dynamics are similar. There were people carrying signs in 19 prior to Johnson saying that he would not run for re-election in 68. People running around with signs that said ABJ for president, anybody but Johnson. Well, they got him. And his name was Richard Milhouse Nixon. How did that work out?
Yep. Not very good. And I don't know. This is why this country is so fucked up sometimes. And look, if, And I hear what you're saying with LBJ, for sure. But if anyone can break the bonds, the ball and chain that is Israel on the American psyche, the American taxpayer, that whole thing about giving tons and tons of money with no conditions, dealing with APAC, dealing with being accused of being a self-hating Jew because you speak out for justice and you are saying, we don't want to turn into the Nazis. We don't want to be what they were to us, okay? It's Joe Biden. He's the one that is capable of making some serious changes to that whole dynamic, because look at what he did with Afghanistan and the shit and the heat and the vitriol and everything that he took to do the right thing. And he did the right thing. And if anyone can do it, I really think it's Joe Biden, but he has to continue to be pressured and pushed to do it, because his connections with Netanyahu run deep. And he does not yet, I don't think he's, but he's beginning to. Again, this is a guy in President Biden who has said that he always looks at what people do. He always takes the approach that human beings are essentially good, and that they really are trying to do the right thing and come from the right place. He has not yet made the connection, or he's slowly beginning to make the connection, I think, that Netanyahu is a fascist.
Poison.
Or
is
not a very nice man. And I could say more, but it's starting to dawn on him. And this is one of those situations where you always talked about no politician is going to be perfect. We're going to have politicians that disappoint. And this is where it is incumbent upon us to continue to push them to do the right thing. Our job does not end. It didn't end in November 2020. It's not going to end this year either. The fight has to continue. But I would put my non-religious eggs, non-religiously painted eggs, in the Biden basket any day over Trump. Any freaking day.
Yeah, and yet I see, Darlene, these posts, and of course it's, some of this are kids who are just terminally online, the old saying, touch grass. They're like, Biden and Trump are both fascists. I'm like, oh really?
But the thing is,
in 4 days, Darlene, it will be 6 months of this godforsaken slaughter. And everybody agreed, the entire world agreed. Remember, even Iran was like, what the fuck was that? Nobody told us on October 7th, and there was actually information to suggest that they were telling the truth. And the entire world saw Israel as the victim on October the 7th, 2023. Are we in agreement?
Yes, absolutely, yes. 40 babies, Jesus. But anyway, go ahead.
And in a matter of days, and certainly now that we are approaching 6 months of this war, and it ain't much of a war when one side can't hardly shoot back, Israel has gone from being the victim to the villain. And it's not even a close call at this point. The ultra-Orthodox, ultra-bloodthirsty, illegal settlers in the West Bank are wagging the dog. And a lot of them still have the nerve to say, well, yeah, but see, we can't do this fighting. You know?
Right.
So I don't... And there's, you know, the conflict of interest that's present here where Bibi, you know, Bibi has to stay in office to stay out of prison. He's got a lot in common with Donald Trump in that sense.
Yes, that sounds familiar.
And so it was... I don't know if you saw it, but today... I'm trying to find it here. He's the defense minister. Oh, God, not Thunder. The Israeli defense minister is calling for elections. There he is. Yeah, Benny Gantz is calling for early elections now. He is a member of the war cabinet. And apparently in polls, he's leading by a long shot. I don't know how much of an improvement he's going to be. But close to 50% of Israelis saying he's the right person to be the next prime minister. Only 35% say that about Psycho Bibi. But I think Psycho Bibi's going to have to be dragged out of office kicking and screaming. And he's the leader of the moderate National Unity Party, and it looks like they would pick up three times as many seats in the Knesset as they now have, and some of those might actually be replacing some of these bloodthirsty proto-Nazis like Beelzebub Smotrich and what's-his-fuck Ben Gavir, and getting those criminals out of office is a big deal.
And one of them massacred people, I think. Didn't he? So he's an assassin, basically. Yeah. So Netanyahu has to watch his back because members of his own Knesset would do him in. That's the thanks that Biden gets for being such an ardent supporter of Netanyahu, who I believe has already said he's supporting Trump for the 2024 election, right? So that puts him in interesting company, does it not? You have Putin, Xi Jinping, and Netanyahu, who are three major leaders. Well, Erdogan and some of the others there, Rocket Man. You know, they don't want Joe Biden to become president. That should also inform people. Hello. About who to vote for, you know, if you're really serious about trying to help the Palestinian people, because we have a shot at it with Joe Biden. We don't. All is lost with Trump and so much more. The IDF, oh boy. I don't trust them as far as I can throw them. Either they are just dumb as fuck, or they are bloodthirsty assassins that just love to kill. Because when you look at what they did to those poor young Israeli men who did everything in their power to not be killed, to their own soldiers, their own countrymen, stripping down putting symbols on their bodies, waving white flags, and they fucking still blew them away. And then to see what happened with the World Central Kitchen heroes, and what they did to them. And of course, it's the same response, you know, they almost sound like, you know, when you do the Russian imitation voice. And, you know, I don't buy it for one second. That came from the top. It totally inures to the benefit of Netanyahu and to the Knesset. If their objective is to exterminate the Palestinian people, which all of us, I think, know and feel that that is what their objective is, they're committing acts of genocide. It makes perfect sense to obliterate those individuals, those seven people from the World Central Kitchen. I can't recall how many there were, because it succeeded, because the World Central Kitchen is withdrawing. Last I understood, they're devastated.
They're done. I mean, what does this say when World Central Kitchen is still working in Ukraine under the Russian onslaught, but the Israelis cannot be trusted not to slaughter World Central Kitchen aid workers in Gaza? And here, I'll just say it. If they have
the Russians,
go ahead.
The Russians will do it now. That's what it says. They'll start targeting World Central Kitchen.
Sure. But if Israel is so filled with extreme sorrow, then find the pimply-faced little asshole who was driving that drone, march him out, or her, and put him up against a wall, and light up the firing squad. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth crowd, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. It's 10 eyes for an eye. That's the crowd that is. Yeah, exactly. The severe sorrow thing ain't cutting it. Now, thank goodness. Look, when you have somebody like Jill Winebanks, who I used to respect, she's Jewish. She's not a practicing Jew. I believe she was asked on Midas Touch her opinion on what's going on in the Middle East. And she had said, you know, in her arrogant way that, you know, certainly the Palestinian people aren't, you know, rising up against their government and trying to overturn Hamas or Mahmoud Abbas or whatever. They're not making any, you know, never mind the fact that they're in poverty. And it's probably, you know, this was before the so-called war in the aftermath of October 7th. And that they're probably just trying to scrounge up a meal and survive day to day. But if she's going to demand that of the Palestinian people, then she must also similarly demand it of the Israeli people. So I am heartened to see that they're out in, you know, feet in the streets. I have hope for them that they will be able to do something, but they're going to have to keep it up. It's going to have to be sustained. But this IDF, their bloodthirst. Oh shit, we just lost power. So I may lose my phone. Are you here? Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we just lost power. So I don't know how long my internet's going to hold out. So if I cut out, that's fine. Oh shit. I can't remember where I was at. The IDF.
You said the protest effort has to be sustained.
Yeah, the effort has to be sustained. So, and hopefully they will be able to do something and get him out. Because they know, they're looking at the situation and this is making Israelis look really bad. And, you know, and I'm hoping that if they continue forward and continue to protest and they don't set, you know, they aren't shot by the IDF, because they're bloodthirsty. They're either stupid, bloodthirsty, or both. Probably a little bit of both. Because they've made some major, major, you know, errors in killing, you know, young Israelis, their own, and now killing these innocent workers who they had planned, and now that's suspended, but they were going to deliver 1 million more meals to starving Palestinians.
Right, and let's be clear. So, while no small number of Palestinian aid workers have been killed in this onslaught against Gaza, these were the first foreign aid workers to be slaughtered by the Israelis. And that has a significant impact on world opinion.
Well, now you raise another interesting point that I wanted to mention is, you know, what the fuck is wrong with that International Court of Justice? What the fuck is taking them so long to determine if this is really a genocide? You and I know it is. Now, granted, they are more of an advisory body, but apparently, they hold a lot of sway. In courts that can do something, that informs those other international courts of justice that can do something. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, that one group that basically did not determine yet, in their view, that Israel was committing genocide. I guess they had limited issues in front of them to determine. And then I think it was brought by South Africa originally. And then another country was weighing in support of Israel, some bullshit like that. But it seems like that we have a problem with court systems around the world, including our own. They take an awfully long time to mete out justice or even lay the foundation for it. I also heard your Filthy Morning habit came up on my YouTube feed. I heard that woman there go on her rant about Joe Biden. You know, I'm sick of hearing about that, you know, they're outraged or whatever, and blah, blah, blah. That was, to me, an easy thing for her to do.
Oh, yeah, well, you got to remember who she is. They don't say it out loud anymore, but she got her start working in Randy Paul libertarian ophthalmologist's office.
Oh, God.
So, just saying.
Well, it's just like the same thing with MSNBC, all of them coming out to speak out against Romney McDaniel hiring there.
Thanks for including the Romney. I think it's always important to include the Romney.
Absolutely. So I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed with Rachel Maddow. I'm not impressed with any of them, because that was an easy one. That was an easy one. To me, yeah, there goes the goddamn fire alarm. I wonder if some idiot hit a telephone. Somebody always does that. I don't like not having power because I haven't eaten. Now I'm hungry.
Oh, no.
But,
Darlene.
I know. And I gotta alert the... Alert, Eversource. Eversource. We're without power on the street. But, and they always say it's going to take 4 hours for the power to come back on. Hopefully it'll be sooner.
Well, let me give you hope, because they told us it was going to be tomorrow.
Yeah, you were going to have a few days. I was surprised. So let me check in if Robin's going to be on the air. Roxanne.
Yeah.
so I, you know, it, it would be, to me, Rachel Maddow, I'd be more impressed if she had spoken out when they shit-canned Mehdi Hasan.
Yeah, same.
But she was as quiet as a graven image. You know, she's not fooling anybody. She's all about the money. I think she owns her own production company now, according to somebody, I don't know if it's Keith Olin or somebody. I heard she owns her own production company. She's all set. You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, basically, she owns MSNBC if she wants to. And even if she oversteps her bounds and they shit can her, she's got her own production company. So she's all set and wealthy beyond imagine. So, yeah, the money did change her. Yeah. So, I'm just not impressed with these, with them speaking out. The other thing was what happened in Michigan with Trump's latest thing where he had all, were those Michigan cops standing behind him or were they Border Patrol agents?
I think they were various kinds of local cops.
That is frightening. What happened there is absolutely frightening. And he targeted Governor Whitmer as well. And all the cops were like, yeah. Because he wants to federalize the police. Can you hear me?
I do, and I'm agreeing with
Robin?
You. Yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't hear you. I don't know if I'm still live or if I might. You know, internet went out.
No, you're still. That was terrifying, and you know all the booing over the over one simple question.
I'll have a full statement on abortion next week.
Yeah, kind of like Infrastructure Week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, listen. We're at the end of things here, and I'm worried about you. I want you to be able to take care of the babies and do. I hope you got something snackable sitting around. Yeah.
I do. So I'm gonna have to munch and call or text Eversource and I'm out. I think my phone is fine because I'm on a tower, cell tower, LTG or something. So I'll sign off. And I, you know, fingers crossed to get my lights back on. Thank goodness I'm in my power chair because it's got some lights on it. So that's good. I can at least see where I'm going.
How long's your battery how long's your battery good for?
It's got to 89%. So after, you know, getting into bed, I'm going to probably have to, I'm just going to plug it in, like the charger in, and hopefully, well, maybe I shouldn't. Well, I'll probably wake up when the lights come on and then I can deal with it then because I do need to recharge the chair every night.
Yeah, and
otherwise it'll run low.
Not to be nosy or anything, but I presume it would be safe. It would be great if your chair was behind an uninterruptible power supply.
Yeah, it would be wonderful. I mean, I have two other chairs. Both are charged, almost fully charged. So if I run into trouble, I've got a backup chair and a backup to the backup. I would love to have solar and battery backup in this house. But that's money. Then I have to shell out, and I've got plenty on my plate financially at this point. But yeah, but it's still warm here. I got it. I have the heat cranked up high, so you know, I'll hopefully be warm for at least another hour or so. So that's good. Anyway, I'll sign off.
Well, you stay safe and you stay warm and.
Thanks.
I hope it comes back quickly.
I do really want to power.
So that you can so that you can nuke something.
I was just hoping I could. Yeah, I don't nuke. I haven't had a nuke. I haven't had a microwave in years. I hate them. So.
Oh wow.
But I have some brownies and some cake and I have some cookies and, you know, all the crap that I bought for Easter. So I'll just go on a sugar high. All right, I'll let you go.
All right, take care, Darlene.
You too, Roxanne. Bye bye.
Bye. And on the way out the door, Jude said, I'm warmed by Darlene's mea culpa at the beginning of the of our call, the ground of one's true humanity. Thank you, Jude. So that's the program. And it is getting colder and colder in here. We're down to 64 degrees in the Fabulous Horn Studios as, well, it's spring in Appalachia, y'all. So glad to be back this evening. So glad to be here this evening. That was existential terror yesterday. And I looked at Annette and I said, if it's got to be this way, I'd rather it be this way with, well, I'd rather you not be, but it was, you know, you get the idea. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to our challenge makers. Max, if you hear this, I will get back with you. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Roger in Oregon. I'm glad you got a good report back after your appointment. That's important. Thank you to our news ninjas, Jean and Ann. Send me a note. Let me know how you're doing. Please get well soon. Thanks, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a comment if you want to take a couple of minutes. It helps raise the visibility of the program so others can find it and participate as well. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, if there's anything you want to download from White Rose Society, please do so before June 1st because an era will end on June 1st as White Rose goes dark. Thank you, Ben, for all you've done for all these years. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop, 25 plus years. Please stay safe. Watch for when your booster becomes available. Flu shots are still not a bad idea even now, because whatever's going around right now really sucketh with a mighty sucking. Wear your masks when you're around the maggots, because, well, they're... they're disease-prone. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse, maintain your social distance as best you can. Going back to what Brother Deacon Asa said a good while ago when I said that what we went through yesterday was the equal or worse than the derecho of 2012, I'm pushing back. This was obviously a false flag operation orchestrated by the Biden administration in order to declare Martian law and seize all our weapons and take all our golfs, I'll add. Wake up, sheeple! Thank you, Brother Deacon. And, of course, if a pastor from South Carolina should happen to approach you saying, well, I get in office, we're going to reestablish the House Un-American Activities Committee, and we're going to start executing them transgenders and them LGBTQs. I'll avoid him like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina, it's all for you. Later.